Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. Today's episode is going to be a Q&A, and I've got like a load of questions in front of me. I'm not sure how many I'm going to get through because sometimes I tend to go off on rants that aren't pre-planned. For those of you who've been listening to the podcast a while, I generally just have the question in front of me and then I just answer it for whatever comes into my head at the time. So that sometimes leads itself to completely random rants that have nothing to do with the actual question. A very popular episode last year, I think it was 191, towards the very end of last year, my hatred for running podcast, I had like 8 questions in front of me and then I answered 3 because I just went off on rants. But they like got a lot of great feedback from that episode. Very mindset, very heavy on the mindset. So I definitely recommend, if you enjoy those types of episodes on making sure you're owning your stuff and building up your own mental toughness and self-discipline so that life seems a lot easier, that is probably the episode I would go check out. Today I've taken these questions from my Instagram stories. So if you're not following my Instagram, Brian Keen Fitness or Brian underscore Keen underscore Fitness on Instagram, I've been doing daily Q&As Monday to Friday normally, where I take 10 questions, 10 question Q&A at random, and I answer them on my Instagram stories. So if you haven't been following that or you haven't been subscribed to my stories, I definitely recommend checking that out. It's kind of like the podcast Q&As, just a really short snippet, 10, 15 second answer on 10 questions that I pick at random. So if you're enjoying these types of episodes that are a bit more longer form, that is just another way to get kind of a daily hit of some fitness, nutrition, training, mindset, business, whatever it is that I end up covering. It tends to be very random on that Q&A. So yeah, definitely hit up that. And those questions from the Instagram story feature are what have came in for today's podcast episode. So first one comes in from Clickety Click One on Instagram. Why do you go to bed early and get up early? Is it more productive or better for your body that way? So just to preface this one, I get up pretty early most days, Monday to Friday, normally 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. Very, very rarely will I get up later than 5 a.m. And if you've been a long time listening to the podcast, you know that I fucking hate getting up early. Not a morning person by nature. I would happily stay up till 1 or 2 a.m. and that would be my default if it was left by design as opposed to by design. The reason I get up early, and I want to make sure that when I say this, early is relative to each person, and it's by no means you should get up at 4 or 5 a.m. That's not what I'm saying here. But the reason I get up early is because it maps to my ambition and what I want to do and what I want to achieve and the productivity level that's enhanced as a result of that. So for example, when I do any seminars or speeches where I'm talking about, you know, be very clear on the end goal. I've spoken about it several times on the podcast that you can't hit a target you can't see. So to know what your end goal is in whatever area of your life you're trying to improve, like I break my life into 4 quadrants. So health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. My health, my physical health, my mental health, my wealth, my bank account, never worrying about paying bills, my love, my personal relationships, romantic relationships, familial relationships, and then my fulfillment levels, the things like podcasts and writing books that make me feel fulfilled and kind of light me up inside. And I break my life into those 4 quadrants. I spoke about that. This is a heavy feature in my third book, which will be out hopefully by the end of this year, the end of 2019. And I've used that 4 quadrant model as the foundation for the book because it's what I use to keep balance in my life. Because I have a very type A personality. I can get very addicted to things and I can go all in on things at the detriment to everything else in my life. It means it can lead sometimes to outward success in the sense that from the outside world, you look very successful in the area that you're trying to achieve in, but it normally comes at the cost of other things. Like one of the reasons that I did so well in fitness modeling and bodybuilding when I was competing was it came at the expense of everything else. It came at the expense of my business. It came at the expense of my family. It came at the expense of my health to a degree because I wasn't sleeping and I was overtraining and undereating. So I ended up off the back of that designing the 4 quadrants that allowed me to keep balance. I actually had to make the mistake twice, if I'm honest, because I did the same thing when I went into business, when I started making so much money that my entire life was based around my business and I felt fulfilled because I was helping people, but it came at the expense of I stopped sleeping, I stopped hanging out with friends and family. So like, I gotta work. And you can justify that story because from the outside, you're getting pats on the back where people are like, look how well you're doing. And when I was able to catch that story, and I was able to break my life into those four quadrants, and I score them equally, you know, I normally go back and score them out of 10, how I'm doing, and they all get 25%. Sometimes you'll be more focused on one. So for example, right now when I'm training for the Arctic, that's going to take a little bit more focus in terms of training. So now I'm training 2 or 3 hours a day where I would generally never do that. My workouts are normally 40, 50 minutes max, but because I'm like, well, I don't want to die in the Arctic, that part of my life has to take a slight imbalance at the minute at the expense of other things. And then that will flip back when I come back, where I'm spending more time with family, more time with friends, and you can get that balance. It's just being aware of it and not mindlessly doing it. So the reason I get up so early is because I'm very clear on what it is that I'm looking to achieve in the areas of my life. So the third book is a big priority right now, getting the draft and getting that ready. So that's going to be released at the end of the year. That's probably the most excited thing, the thing that I'm most excited about right now. For those of you who read my book, The Fitness Mindset, and you enjoyed the mindset section of that book, you are going to love the third one because it's an expansion on those ideas and very much a blueprint on this is probably the way you need to think in order to enhance certain areas of your life. And if you enjoy my mindset stuff, it will be a very, I'm hoping anyways, it will be a very helpful read for people. I know when I read back on drafts and edit it, I know I get a lot from it, which is similar to the mindset section of my book when I would reread and re-edit. And I would take something new from it each time and kind of hammer home messages that I may have forgotten or needed reminding of. So the reason I get up early is because I'm very clear on what it is I'm looking to achieve. I want my book to be out. I want to run more seminars, so I'm working directly with people. I want to enhance my podcast because I freaking love, like after the book, the third book, the podcast is something I can't believe I get paid to do because I love it. And I did it for a year. You know, we were at 1.4, 1.5 million downloads before I brought on any sponsors. And it's something that I'm like, I can't believe I get to do this now and get paid for it. And that's the kind of realm that I work with. I tend to make decisions based out of would I do this for free, and then I go all in on it. And as a result of that, you end up setting up a situation for good things to happen. And as a result, you end up getting paid for things you would do for free. In my case, anyway, I've been very fortunate. And I get up early again because I'm clear on that. I want my podcast to hit a certain number of downloads to help the amount of people that I want to help, because that fills me up in terms of fulfillment levels. I want to get my book out there for the same reason. I want to spend more time with my daughter and do all the things that I can do with her and be in the financial position to do the amazing things that will hopefully serve as memories for her for the rest of her life. And being very clear on that allows me to reverse engineer my day. So getting up early allows me to do all those things. So I generally, and I hate saying this because you sound like such a fucking twat when you say it, but there's a saying in the army that we get more done before 9 a.m. You know, we get more done before 9 a.m. than people have done all day. And that's how I feel a lot of the time when I get up at 4 a.m. in particular, because when I'm up at 4 a.m. and by the time 9 a.m. comes around, I've already worked out for a couple of hours. I've already written a part of the book or recorded a podcast. I've already read for an hour. I've already done my morning routine. And I've got most of the important tasks in my day done by the time 9 a.m. rolls around, which means that when the rest of the world wakes up, so when my daughter's up or I want to hang out with my mum for lunch or go meet friends, I'm not pumped up with anxiety because I've got a massive to-do list, because all the important things generally are done by 9 or 10 a.m. And as a result, it allows me to be less stressed. So I show up a lot better with those people, and it reverse engineers back to what I want. I'm very clear on the end goals of what I want to achieve this year. And as long as your actions are mapping to your ambition, you keep doing that. And when I say 4 or 5 a.m. for me, that's because right now at this stage in my life in February 2019, getting up at 4 or 5 a.m. maps to my ambition. It allows me that action of getting up in the morning not only helps build my self-discipline, which is something I try and work on every day because I fucking hate getting up in the morning. I spoke about that in the recent podcast on 8 steps to build your mental toughness. Getting up in the morning is one of my steps because I don't like it. I don't enjoy it, but I do it every day. And one of my mentors used to always say to me that successful people do what they have to do, whether they feel like it or not. And getting up early and every morning that you end up beating the mattress, you know, mind over mattress, you end up feeling mentally stronger and getting a head start on the day. And the same reason I run for the exact same reason, because I hate running. And it allows me to build up my mental toughness, my self-discipline. And as a result, I tend to get more done because I'm not making decisions based on how I feel. I'm making decisions based on what I want to do. And then how I feel is nearly irrelevant, because if I'm tired, I still do what I have to do. I work out, I write the section of the book, I do the interview. If I'm sick, I still do it, unless it's something that's going to, you know, detriment to my immune system, where I just feel sick for whatever reason, I've eaten something that didn't agree with me, or I don't let my feelings be determined, or I don't let my feelings be a factor on whether I do something or not. I do something based on whether it has to be done or not, and not on how I feel. And that's the reason I go to bed and get up early. Getting up early actually isn't that difficult. I've spoken about this in other podcasts. It's actually going to bed early that's hard. So I don't negotiate on my 8 hours of sleep. If I'm up at 4 a.m., I'm normally in bed at 8 p.m. If I'm up at 5 a.m., I'm in bed by 9 p.m. That's Monday to Friday, and then it's a bit more lenient during at the weekend. And the reason I do that is because, well, for one, I had a couple of bad habits that were creeping in at nighttime. Generally, my food cravings, when I want something sugary, something milky, like ice cream or chocolate, that normally comes in the evening time. Also, I was doing fucking stupid, mindless stuff in the evening, like 9:30, 10 p.m., 10:30, flicking through Instagram, flicking through social media, watching a load of TV. That wasn't helping at all. So I was like, well, there's no point. This isn't actually serving anything. With the exception of if I'm hanging out with a friend and it's ran over, or I'm hanging out with family members and it's ran over past 9 or 10 p.m., then I'll adjust my time to wake up later the next day. But that serves a greater purpose. If I'm trying to enhance a relationship, you know, personally, romantically, familially, with a family member, that maps to that ambition. So I will make the short-term adjustment where I'm like, well, I'll stay up later tonight and I'll just get up later tomorrow, and then I'll get back on track the next day. So it's been very clear. And I'm not saying to get up at 4 a.m. I'm not saying to get up at 5 a.m. I'm not even saying to get up at 6 or 7 a.m. Get up at whatever time works for you. Just don't do it mindlessly. The only issue I ever have with myself or with other people is when you're doing things subconsciously and you're doing things mindlessly and there's no reason for it. And just ask yourself, is getting up the time you're getting up now helping with your end goal? Would you feel less stressed if you got up half an hour earlier? Would you feel better if you got up and trained an hour before work? Ask yourself those questions, and then not confusing things like, I don't have time, which isn't true. You do have time, you just can't prioritize it, or you're prioritizing something else. Like, for example, there's days when I'll skip training. If I've gone to bed at 11 or 12 to 11 p.m. or 12 a.m., I'll skip training the next day because I'm not going to sacrifice. I could get up at 6, I could get up at 5, but sleep is more important for me, for my recovery, for my mental health. So, and for insulin sensitivity, if you're going into the hard and heavy science on it. So I tend to prioritize getting sleep over training. That's a priority thing. That's not a time thing. And when I stopped fooling myself into, oh, I don't have time, you know, I go to bed at 11 p.m. or 12 a.m. I'm like, oh, I don't have time to get up at 5. That's not true. I'm prioritizing sleep over getting up to train. And when I stopped fooling myself, it makes it a lot easier to make decisions, because then you don't beat yourself up for one. And two, you get very real on what's the most important thing, and then you make your decisions based out of that. So the reason I get up early is because it maps my actions to my ambition on what I want to achieve and what I want to do, and allows me to be more productive. And the reverse of that, going to bed at 11 p.m., 11:30 p.m. wasn't serving me, because I was doing mindless stuff, and then I was waking up tired the next day, feeling more stressed and anxious because I was running around chasing my tail all day, and I spent 2-3 hours the night before just watching, you know, 2 hours of Family Guy, or being on Netflix, or flicking through social media and Instagram, which is mindless stuff that isn't helping you when you're not doing it consciously. So that's why I do it. Not saying that that's what everyone should do, but only ask yourself the question, everything you do and every decision you make and every choice you make, is it mapping to what you want? And if you don't know, are you clear on what you want? Because if you don't know what you want, you'll take whatever you get. Next one comes in from SMCA89. Any tips for public speaking? So I couldn't remember if I covered this on a podcast before. I definitely have done a video on this on YouTube on public speaking and getting over fear, but I can't remember if I covered it on the podcast. more, and it's probably changed since, because it was definitely about a year, 18 months ago. But the main tips for public speaking, for those of you, to give you a little bit of a background, I spoke about this in the third book as well, because I used to have a really bad fear of public speaking. And it's a weird one, because if you see a lot of the polls on people, their top fears, it's like fear one is public speaking, fear two is death, which is fucking crazy. But that probably served an evolutionary purpose, that, you know, if you were out where you were being judged by people and being ostracized, you were probably going to be exiled from the tribe, and that wasn't good for, you know, genes and passing on your genes. So I'm sure there's an evolutionary reason for it. But in the sense of, I had a really bad fear of public speaking. I remember probably up into my 20s, I used to get terrified. And I've spoken before, I used to have my own issues with anxiety anyways. And that was massively enhanced if I needed to get up and speak in front of people, particularly if it wasn't on a topic I was comfortable about speaking on. And I think a lot of that is the case with most people. Like, you put me up on stage to talk about fitness or mindset or business, and I can ream it off. You know, it's in my circle of competence, and I can generally legitimately answer the next question, which normally is your indicator whether you're in your circle of competence or not. But if you put me up and say, okay, speak on cryptocurrency, or, you know, index funds, or, you know, strawberry jam, I haven't a fucking clue what to talk about. So to a degree, public speaking normally comes to being within a certain level of circle of competence on what you're speaking on. But for the majority of people, and where I was, it was just the genuine fear of actually standing in front of people and speaking, because you get this fight or flight response, or fight, flight or freeze, which is probably more accurate because you tend to freeze in a lot of cases. What I found with public speaking, and Rob Lipsett on a recent podcast gave great advice on this, because he used to have a terrible fear of public speaking as well. And we discussed this back and forth. And he said to start with a small crowd and then build your way up. And if you can do that by design, where you intentionally get up and speak in front of your family members, if you have a presentation for college or for your job or for anything, get up in front of your family members and speak, then bring in a few extra people, bring in some friends, then go up to, you know, a Toastmasters or some form of public speaking group where people are intentionally trying to get better at that skill, because public speaking is a skill. Very few people are good at it naturally. Yes, you can hone the talent over time, and I do it for a living now, but there was a time when it used to terrify me. But start building up slowly, step by step, you get ahead, not necessarily in fast spurts. And then you go up to, say, 5 or 10 people, and you go to 20 people, 50 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, 10,000 people. And it's the same process on and on. And there's a funny thing with public speaking, and this is what I spoke about in the working title of my third book, is The Life Mindset. And there's a funny thing about public speaking, because it never really goes away. That fear never goes away. You just tend to, one, get better at handling the fear. You know, successful people, again, another thing that one of my mentors used to tell me was, you feel the fear and do it anyways. You never stop feeling the fear. You know, I spoke about this on the podcast with Marcus Smith recently, that, you know, someone that's ran 32 marathons in 32 days, or 30 marathons in 30 days in Dubai, in the heat of Dubai. And you never stop being afraid. You know, I was the same going out to the Sahara, you know, before I ran 6 back-to-back marathons in the Sahara. You're terrified. You're still afraid. It's just that you learn to get better and become more acquainted with that fear. And you learn to feel it and do it anyways, because it doesn't go away. It's still there sitting on your fucking shoulder. It's just that it doesn't consume you and take over. And there's an old adage that fear and courage, if you picture them like two wolves, that whichever one grows is the one you feed the most. And you build more confidence and build more courage by consistently attacking things that you're afraid of. You know, and there's an old saying that behind every fear is a person you want to be. And I tend to rehash or use those mantras in my head when I'm actually living it. You know, I'll be doing the same thing in the Arctic now. You know, when times get tough, which they will, because that's what happens when you're running 230 kilometers through fucking minus 30 degrees in the Arctic Circle. I had to do it with the Sahara. I had to do it with other events that I've done. You feel the fear and do it anyways. And public speaking is similar. You just get better at handling that fear. And pushing through it, even though it's so uncomfortable. And one of the reasons that I get up early that I spoke about earlier, and one of the reasons that I run every day when I'm training, is because you start to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And then that tends to translate into other areas of your life. Because if you've ran 10, 20 kilometers, in my case, you know, this is relative, it might be 1-2 kilometers for you, it might be just going to the gym for you or walking around the block after work, something that you're uncomfortable doing. But if you do that every day, you end up building up that skill or building up that mental muscle where it gets easier. You get better at handling things that are uncomfortable and unnatural to you. And public speaking is the same. Like when I had to go and speak at Google headquarters in front of the amount of people that were there, and then it being recorded to go all over the Google, all over the world, like there was hundreds of thousands of people watching that. And you just handle it. You just deal with it. You feel the fear, you feel the butterflies, and then you use it and rechannel that energy. And then it's about a story you tell yourself. You know, I repeat those mantras over and over again. Feed the courage, feed the stronger version of you. Don't feed the fear. I repeat the courage behind every fear is the person you want to be. Like, they can be cheesy fucking lines, but they serve me and they help me when push comes to shove. Because it's easy for me to talk about it here. I'm sitting in a nice fucking warm house, looking out in my mountain view with the microphone in front of me. That's not the time to fucking worry about when shit gets hard. It's when push comes to shove. And this is what I genuinely do when things get hard, when I am struggling, when I am afraid. And that's why I apply it. But it's like everything. The more you do it, the better it gets. And one of the reasons that I say on the podcast so often, how you do anything is how you do everything, is even though you have a fear of public speaking, and there are ways to get better, speaking in front of small crowds, consistently doing it, getting schooled up on your topic so that you're confident in what you're talking about, they're all legitimate tactics that you can use. But the other ones outside of that that I tend to apply myself is making sure that your life is a little bit uncomfortable every day, and getting up a little bit earlier, or going for that little bit longer of a run, or pushing through that workout. Do things that make you uncomfortable, because as soon as you get into an environment where you have to public speak and you feel that fear and you feel that discomfort, you're like, I felt this before. I remember this feeling. I'm familiar with that feeling. You can say hello to it and be like, fuck you, I'm going to do it anyways. And that's basically what I do. I'm not sure how much that helps, but that's the tactics and strategy that I apply when it comes to public speaking and anything I'm afraid of in general. You know, I spoke in the new book about anchoring past successes for future endeavors, where you remember the times when you were afraid in the past. And, you know, the example I like to use is, once upon a time, kissing a boy or a girl was terrifying. Like when you were 10, 11, 12, 13, whenever you were, kissing a boy or a girl was fucking terrifying. And now you normally just take it for granted for the most part. And anchoring parts of your life and times when you were afraid, and realize that as soon as you do something, it tends to never be as scary as you once thought. And I bring it back to, you know, kissing a boy or a girl for the first time, whatever your preference is, or depending on your gender. And that tends to help me. And then I just scale that up now. Every time I get afraid, I'm like, well, look, you're terrified when you're running through the Sahara. Suck it up and come on. Like, let's get this done. And I'll continue to do that going forward. It's like adding legs to a table. You know, if you picture a physical table, confidence and building self-confidence in anything that you do is like adding legs to a table. The more times you say you're going to do something and you do it, you add another leg to that table. Like a table with one leg is very easy to knock and very easy to rock. But if you consistently say you're going to do something in the gym, in your life, in your personal life, in your job, if you set goals and targets that are slightly above your reach, where you're like, I'm not sure if I can do that, but I think I can, and you do that, it's going to add another leg to the table. And then you consistently do that over time. There is no one single tip. There is no one thing you can do and boom, your public speaking fear is gone overnight. But there's a lot of small things you can do consistently well over time. Ordinary things done consistently well lead to extraordinary results. Next one comes in from Barry Cousins 01. Top 3 tips for life in general. So I wasn't really sure how to answer this one. And to be honest, I'm still not fucking sure how I'm going to answer this one. But I suppose the best tips I can give are generally the ones that have served and helped me, because I'm a little bit further along than I was several years ago. And probably one is stop caring what other people think about you. I did a full podcast on that. I think it's episode 89 or 91. Stop caring what people think about you. For the most part, get very clear on who your inner circle is, the people whose opinion does matter and carries weight, and then block out the rest of the noise. Because what I found from personal experience, when I make decisions based off the opinions of others and I'm caring too much what other people think, I either make bad decisions or I don't make any decision at all. I get analysis paralysis, where I get so worried about, fuck, what will that person say, or what will this person say, what will my mum say, what will my dad say, what will my cousin say, what will my brother's boyfriend, sister's cousin's dog say, and all these things start to go through my head. And it normally leads, in my case, it normally manifests in inaction. And I end up making errors of omission where I actually just don't take action at all. And that's probably the best piece of advice I can offer. Definitely tip is don't care and make decisions based on the opinions of others. But to piggyback that with another tip, don't necessarily take advice from people who you wouldn't switch positions with. And they're kind of contradictory tips, but I'm going to hopefully flesh it out so it makes more sense. One of the things that irritates the fuck out of me from when I watch people that are close to me, or just people in general, and this is, I'm very aware, this is a projection of myself because I did it for so long. When people take advice from people who they wouldn't switch positions with, that hurts my fucking brain. Every time I talk to somebody who's like, Mary and John or Laura or fucking Jack said, my boyfriend or girlfriend is terrible, or I should use a bar or shake diet, or I shouldn't be going to the gym or eating that way all the time because, you know, you could do this, it's going to be way easier. And Mary, Jack, or Joan are single, or have had toxic relationship after toxic relationship, or are 3 stone overweight, and they're giving advice and you're considering accepting it. That fucking grinds me. And again, I did it. Like, I remember the example I give in the book, and I fucking still cringe when I think on it. Like, in my early 20s, before I met my first girlfriend, it was a pretty good relationship with that. It went its separate ways due to circumstances. But I remember in the lead up to that, anytime I would bring, I had a group of friends, about 8 guys, and we used to all bring home any girl we were seeing to introduce them to the guys to see what they would think. And every time they would find fault with the girl you'd bring home. And then that would kind of plant a seed, and you're like, yeah, shit, she is like that, or she does look like that, or whatever it was. And you'd ask them for their advice. Well, what should I do? From the other guys who were in the exact fucking same position as you, or the other guys that were completely single or in toxic relationships, you were asking them, I was asking them for advice on what I should do. And when I think back on that now, and I see it so often with people where they ask their out of shape friends, well, what should I do? How should I eat? What should I, you know, how should I train? Why the fuck are you asking those people? You wouldn't change positions with them. You know, don't ask somebody who hates their fucking job, is working 9 to 5 and hates it, you know, what you should do with your career choice. You know, should you start your own business? Don't ask that person. You wouldn't change position with them. Then why the fuck are you asking them in the first place? And that piece of advice is something that probably has a bit too much of a trigger for me, because I did it for so long, and I did it in every area. I did it with relationships. I did it when I was making job decisions. I would ask people who hated their fucking job for their advice on whether I should start my own business. And of course they'd say, no, don't do that. It's a terrible idea. You know, there's no security in that. You can't do that. People that were fucking miserable for some cases, 30, 40 years of their life until they retired. Don't ask those people for advice. That's fucking stupid. Like, and again, I did it for so long, and it's probably why it triggers so much. Combine those two things, that get very clear on what it is you want and who's important in your life. Their opinions matter. And yes, give their, whatever they say, give it some weight if it needs it. But make sure that the amount of weight you distribute is in proportion to how much of the position you would change with them. You know, don't take, like, it's so obvious. Like, someone living on the street, you're probably not going to take financial advice from. But yet we do it all the time in our personal life, with our job, with our relationships, with our fitness. But you wouldn't ask someone living on the street with zero money, who clearly has no assets, well, what should I do with my financial plan, or how should I put my savings? You wouldn't do that. But yet we do it in our personal life. And that's probably tip number 2. The third one then, I think, is do something you're passionate about in some area of your life. And this is a little bit of a new one, that I've been thinking about a lot recently, because I'm very fortunate in the circle that I'm in, the inner circle of people that I have, the networks that I frequently are either in contact with for podcasts or interviews or connect with through masterminds or whatever it is. I'm very fortunate with the people that are I'm normally around, because there's a reason that like attracts like. I love what I do. I'm so fucking grateful for the life that I live, and I'm so passionate about what I do because I love it. And the people I surround myself with are very similar. But I forget every once in a while I'll have a conversation with somebody who's not doing that. And you can see a kind of deadness in their eyes where, you know, life, they've nearly given up on life. You know, I spoke in my first book, The Fitness Mindset, about the fear of being buried when I was 25 but not dying until I was 80. And I was living that life. I was on that path of literally just giving up on everything that I was passionate about and be like, right, I'll just fall into this routine, work my job for the next 40 years, get a wife, have some kids, retire, travel and die. And, you know, that wasn't conscious, but that's subconsciously how I was living. And that's what my actions were doing, you know, getting very clear on actions, mapping to ambition. And as a result of that, that all changed when I got very clear on what I was passionate about. And I spoke in the mindset section of The Fitness Mindset about getting your ladder up against the right wall. And that's how I make all my decisions. You know, I spoke when I used to work full time as a primary school teacher that even though I did like my job, it was climbing the ladder against the wrong wall. And there's a very unfulfilling feeling that comes when you start climbing or get close to the top of the ladder and realize, fuck, I'm up against the wrong wall. You know, you can do it in relationships, you can do it in job, you can do it in your fitness. You know, if you've gone on a super calorie restricted diet or a bar or a shake diet where you've completely put all your time and effort into this thing, and then you do it and go, fuck, this isn't what I want. I had a similar thing happen to me when I used to compete as a bodybuilder and a fitness model, where, you know, I won my pro card at the Miami Pro in 2014. I came eighth in the world in Las Vegas in 2015. And I had this massive feeling of unfulfillment where I'm like, man, why do I feel so unfulfilled doing this? The same thing happened when I started making some really good money in 2015, 2016, where I would chase a number and then I'd hit that number and I'm like, shit, okay, I don't feel any different. I'm like, no, I need to make more. You know, I need to make, you know, 700,000 and that's what's going to make me happy. And then you hit these numbers and hit these targets and you end up feeling super unfulfilled. And then you're at the top of this ladder looking back going, seeing all the things that you've left behind that you've done at the detriment of earning this amount of money or getting your body composition to this level of body fat. And there's a thought philosophy that I live by, that when you're reaching for the moon, don't forget the flowers at your feet. And that's something I try and live by now, that it's okay to reach for the moon. You know, it's okay to go after the things that make you the best version of you, that wake you up in the morning and drive you to do the thing you're passionate about. That's amazing. You should have that. But don't let it come at the expense of the flowers at your feet, your family, your friends, the people that are important to your life, because that can happen. I did that. I was just fortunate enough that I caught it in a time that it wasn't irreversible and any of the relationships or choices that I made, well, none of them were irreversible, but I just got lucky. That was just pure circumstance that I caught it in time before it had gone so bad in one direction. But make sure your ladder's against the right wall. When you're doing something you're passionate about, like whether that's your fitness, whether that's your job, whether that's your family, whatever it is, your painting, music, it looks different for different people. But don't ever let that stop. Don't ever stop doing that because you don't have time. And I've seen this example, unfortunately, so often recently, where people that have a deadness in their eyes at 28, 38, 48, where they loved music or they loved working out or they loved painting or they loved something, but they stopped because of work, because of family, because of kids. They got wrapped up in a story that I don't have time to do these things. And that's not true. you will do whatever you prioritize. And if you're passionate about something, that's going to fill you up. That's going to give you more energy. That's going to make you feel better about everything in your life. I'm a big believer in look after, be selfish to be selfless. That if you're not the strongest version of yourself, you can't be the best parent. You can't be the best boyfriend or girlfriend, husband or wife. You can't be the best work employee or work employer if you're not looking after yourself first. There's a reason when you're on an airplane and they talk about the masks coming down if a plane is crashing, they say, put on your own mask first and then look after your kids or look after the elderly people beside you. Because if you don't look after yourself first, none of it matters, because you're going to start projecting your shit because you're not feeling good onto those other people and you're not going to be the best version of you. And that comes back with being passionate about something in your life and not wrapping a story that you can't do it anymore because you don't have time, you don't have energy, you don't have money. The things you're passionate about, you would do for free. The things you're passionate about will give you more energy, and the things you're passionate about will make you want to get out of bed every morning, whatever that is for you. Don't let that drop. And if you're 21, 22 listening to this, in your early 20s, it may not be an issue yet, but maybe the seed's been planted that you don't give it up, that thing that you love to do. If you're older, 30s, 40s, you know, mid 40s, 50s, whatever it is that you're listening to this, go back to that thing if you need to. You know, it's never too late to go back and do what you love. And we all know that thing that you would do for free, that thing that puts you into a flow state where you lose track of time, that thing, you need to keep that, because that's ladder up against the right wall, then you can climb that. You know, it's very important to be very clear that these are the things that make me happy. Do more of those things. You know, as I said, the alternative, I spoke about this in the fitness mindset, make a list of the things that make you unhappy and do less of it. We overcomplicate the fucking shit out of life. And my top three tips: stop caring about what people think about what you do. Make the decisions based out of what you think is the best decision at the time, even if it means listening to other people who are in a further position than you, mentors ahead of you. Don't listen to people who you wouldn't trade positions with. Yes, take their opinion and maybe give it some 10% weight, 20% weight, but don't make your decision based out of what fucking Mary or John says. And then make sure your ladder's up against the right wall and do something you're passionate about and do that consistently. Life is simple. We overcomplicate it. Make a list of the things that make you happy. Make a list of the people who light you up, who give you fire, who aren't emotional vampires and drain you. The people who you're like, my life is better because they're here. My life is better because I enhance their life and they enhance mine. Spend more time with those people. Do more of those things. Make an opposite list on the other side of all the people who are negative fuckers who drain your energy and drain your emotional energy. And they're just constantly pulling you down and pulling you back. And make a list of those things that you hate to do, that you dread every Monday or Wednesday or Friday or Saturday doing. Make a list of those things. All the things that make you unhappy, do less of it. Make a list of all the things that make you happy, do more of it. Next question comes in from Graham Walker. So a little bit of a trend forming on today's episode, very heavy on the mindset, but how do you keep so positive? So this is a combination. I actually have a little bit of a strategy for this. And the reason I wanted to answer this question is because it kind of ties in what I spoke about in the three tips that I'd offer for life in general. And one of them is, I identified several years ago the negative parts of my life, either the people, which was a huge part, and the things I was doing that made me weaker or made me feel more negative. And I identified those and gradually put a step in place to pull myself out of it or remove myself from those people. So to give you an example, I had a very unsupportive network of people, friends in particular, family members to a degree, that were a constant drain. And to be honest, a lot of it was just that I wasn't mentally strong enough to be able to deal with it at the time. But when I was able to identify that these people were actually pulling me back, either consciously, where they would have fucking negative words and always tell you you couldn't do something or tell you were stupid or tell you that those ideas that you had or dreams that you had were stupid, which were all things I lived. And when people tell me, I'm like, yes, this is what happens. This is how people are. And I've lived through it myself. And it gets to a point where those negative comments and negative fuel, particularly from the people closest to you, can be fuel for your fire, and it can be actually really serving. But at the time, it was really unsupportive to me because I wasn't confident enough in myself to be able to make those decisions. And I did disguise a lot of my fear as practicality, where people would tell me that, yeah, the example I always use is starting my own business, because I worked full-time as a primary school teacher, which is seen as quite a good job in the sense that it's quite secure, holidays are good, pay is decent. And when I left that, I got a lot of feedback, a lot of pushback from certain people in my family, certain friends who were like, you're a fucking idiot. They're like, why are you leaving a secure job to go work in a fucking gym? And these are the exact words used. And I remember I had a little bit of a penny drop moment where I was working as a teacher and I was earning fuck all money, because teachers, particularly in London, don't earn fuck all money. I was earning like 20 grand a year. And I remember at one point, I remember thinking that I would rather earn 20 grand a year in a gym than 100 grand a year teaching. And that was the first time in my life when my success metric changed. And this is where I'm becoming very aware that generally the way we see the world is a reflection of the experiences and biases that we have. And I subconsciously had this in mind that success was having a good job, having a secure job, you know, having people respect what you do. And that was the way I was brought up. That was the message that was hammered home for me. And that became my subconscious belief. And when I had a penny drop moment and an aha moment that that's not the right success metric for me right now, that I would actually rather earn less money and be in a gym working with people than earning more money doing something that I like but don't love. And instantly overnight, it changed my paradigm. It changed the way that I saw the world, because I had always, rightly or wrongly, believed that the more money you make, the more successful you are. That was my unsupportive belief system. And I'm very fortunate. And right now, it's actually ironic, because when you do what you love and you serve more people, it never feels like work. And as a result of not feeling like you work, you can do more. And when you do more, you get paid significantly more. You provide more value so that your fee or your service is significantly higher. And it's a complete irony and something that I probably, until I lived it, wouldn't have believed it. But when I first realized that what I'm doing isn't what I love, it's what I like. But sometimes, you know, the death of good is great, or the death of great is good, where when something's okay, and I spoke about this in the third book that will be out later this year, that's a really important thing to watch out for. When your response to anything is, yeah, it's okay. Yeah, it's okay. Because that's where you can really get fucked up. Because if you tell somebody something and you ask them, you know, how's your relationship? How's your job? How's your health? And you're like, it's fucking shit. You're like, okay, that person is in enough pain. They're probably going to make a change soon. But you don't make a change when it's okay. When something's okay, you just kind of go along to get along. And that's how I was with so many areas of my life. People are like, well, how's your job? I'm like, yeah, it's okay. And that's how I felt. But when you don't hate it, you don't have enough drive to change it. And when I made that change first, I remember the people who were supportive, and I remember the people who were unsupportive. You know, my sister jokes sometimes that I have a fucking memory like an elephant. And I do remember. I remember the people that were very supportive of my decision. And those people, for the large part, are still in my life. Because how you do anything is how you do everything. They support everything I do, whether they believe it or not or understand it or not. They believe that it's what I need to do, and they champion that. And I did the same for them. But I also remember the people who were on the opposite side. The people who were like, you're a fucking fool. You're an idiot. You're stupid. What are you thinking? You can't make that work. And I had a huge realization when I started to climb the ladder against the right wall. And I go into this in quite a lot of detail in The Fitness Mindset. I know a lot of you have read that people's opinion changes as more evidence becomes clear. And when you start to, this is something that I will keep with me for the rest of my life. The people, I remember the two or three people particularly who were close, who were like, you're a fool, you're an idiot, were the same people that when the book came out would tell me, I knew you were going to be a success. I knew you were going to do great. And I remember looking at them blank-eyed going, no, you fucking didn't. You were the one that told me I was a fool for doing it. You were the one that told me I was stupid. You were the one that told me I was an idiot. You were the one I fucking used for fuel in the morning that I didn't want to get up. And it made me realize that people have that hindsight bias. They forget they've said it. And yet we attach to it. And we make decisions based off the opinions of others. And it doesn't help. And yes, you can use it for fuel for your fire. And I did. And I was able to rechannel it and reframe it as a positive thing. And it allowed to enhance and support me. And it still to this day does. But there would have been another time in my life when that would have just broke me. It would have crippled me. It's fuel for the fire. But yes, fire can light up your house, but can also burn the fucking thing down. And that allowed me to identify the negative people. And I stopped surrounding myself with those people. Some I physically removed myself. In the case of friends, was a lot easier. I just physically removed myself and stopped hanging out with them. You know, if they wanted to hang out, I'd be like, nope, sorry, I can't. And with certain family members or certain people who were closer vicinity for, you know, work reasons or gym reasons or whatever it is, for people that are listening, people that you can't necessarily cut out because of, you know, they're your mom or your dad or your brother or your sister or your boss or work colleague, and you can't cut them out, you can cut out the words that their weight carries. And you literally, I tend to do this funny thing that if somebody is talking to me who I don't respect or don't care about their opinion, they'll throw some abstract opinion at me and I listen to it like it's German. I don't speak German. And I'm like, yeah, cool. And I nod my head like I would if someone spoke a German word to me. And that's generally how I handle it. I'm like, just tune out the folly. I'm like, that opinion doesn't matter. Let it go in one ear and out the other, because I'm not attaching to that, because that may dictate a decision I make and I don't give a fuck what you think. And when I do that, it helps me. It's just a tool in my toolkit that I use. That allows me to stay positive because I'm not listening to negative influences. It also works in a weird way in the sense that when you're not listening to negative influences, when you do get some constructive criticism, you tend to be a lot more open to it. Now, I love constructive criticism. For those of you listening to the podcast for a while or following me on social, I love nothing more than constructive criticism on how can I interview better? How can I write better? How can I podcast better? How can I do this better? And anything. Sometimes it'll be an opinion, I'm like, I can't actually do that, but I appreciate the comment all the same. And sometimes it's something really good that I'm able to take going forward. And I love that. But when you're not constantly around, the danger's in the dose. If you're constantly listening to criticism and constantly listening to negativity, of course, if somebody from the outside comes in at you with a negative comment, you're going to attack them back. You're going to start projecting and try and take control of a situation where you're like, yeah, fuck you, I'm not that, because you're not happy with the way you are, because you're always around that negativity. When you do get a small bit of it and it's constructive, it actually makes you better. It's just the dangers in the dose. So I keep positive by not being around those negative people. The other thing that works with that is I use what I call gratitude anchors. And this is a big section. I feel like I'm all I'm doing is talking about the fucking new book. It's because I was writing it. I've been writing it the last couple of weeks. It's the first draft. So it's super fresh in my head. I use gratitude anchors. My three gratitude anchors, I have them right here beside me. My daughter is one. My mom is my other. And the third one is my job. Like I've literally just put work as the gratitude anchor. And how I use my gratitude anchors is when I feel low or negative or something quote unquote bad has happened, something that's not supportive or getting me closer to an end goal, I do some negative visualization that I've spoke about on the podcast. I think about my daughter in a car crash. I think about my mom in a coma. I think about my job and all of that being taken away from me. And that tends to put me in a lot more positive state nearly instantly. You know, I love that negative visualization and old Stoic philosophy that I don't want to have more, I want to desire less. And that's what I do with negative visualization. When I feel that I'm desiring way too much, that in an unsupportive way, or I'm starting to feel sorry for myself, or I'm starting to get into a negative state, I think about the things that are important. My inner circle, my daughter, my mom, the life that I get to live. And I picture those things being taken away. And every time I do that, I get grateful for the things that I do have, as opposed to constantly seeking out the next thing and seeking out the new thing, or focusing on the area of lack and focusing on the thing that I don't have. What you focus on is what will expand. And if you focus on the car you don't have, you focus on the boyfriend or girlfriend you don't have, you focus on the job you don't have, that's the shit that expands. When you start to focus on the things you do have that you would be gutted if they were taken away from you, it puts you into a positive mindset. And then as a result, you can start actively asking questions that can move you closer to the things you do desire. You're not just focusing on all this lack, going into a negative state because you don't have this, you don't have that. That's something that serves me. I combine those two things. I use my gratitude anchors, the negative visualization, and it keeps me positive because it stops me from desiring things that I don't really fucking want in the first place. And if I do want them, it allows me to make decisions from a non-emotional standpoint. I can be a lot more rational in the choices I'm making because I'm not constantly striving for this or that or bigger or better because I'm feeling insecure or I need my ego fed. I'm making the decisions because it maps to the ambition of what I want to achieve, and it's the thing that makes me feel fulfilled and it makes me a bit clearer. I put that with knocking out a lot of the negative people in my life, and I don't have, for the most part, any of those people in my life anymore. You do that consistently over time, your life gets a lot more positive. Don't plant apple seeds and expect an orange tree to grow. It just doesn't fucking happen. Don't spend time, 80% of your time, 90% of your time around negative people and expect your life to be positive. Don't spend 80 or 90% of your life doing things you don't want to do and doing negative things that are making you weaker and expect yourself to be strong or expect yourself to be positive. You fucking won't. Don't plant apple seeds and expect orange trees to grow. So next one comes in from Mary Martin. There's a very overlapping tie on these questions. I swear this is random. Like, I've just got a load of questions in front of me and I'm pulling them at random. How do you deal with haters and people who come at you with negativity? So this is something I ask quite frequently of guests that are high profile. So, you know, I spoke about that with JT Marianak, who's got, you know, nearly 500,000 followers on Instagram, Rob Lipsit, who's got about the same, and a lot of high profile people who have significant following. And to be honest, everyone has a different way of dealing with it. And for me, I spoke on it earlier that because I don't have a lot of negative people in my life now, I'm very easily able to identify what's constructive criticism and what's destructive criticism. And there's a big difference between both. I'm a massive fan of constructive criticism. I love people calling me out on my shit where I don't know something or a way that I can improve that is potentially serving me by giving me an opposing viewpoint. You know, I had a great episode with Scott Babty recently, and we've got different belief systems on things like multivitamins, diet drinks, but I love talking to people like that who have a different opinion to me, but can explain their reasoning behind it, because it allows me to learn more and allows me to be a lot more objective with what I actually think, because now I've got more knowledge because I'm talking to somebody who holds the opinion on the opposite side. And that's constructive. Destructive is just when people are being pricks, like, for the lack of a better term or better word. Like, when you get, the more self-aware you get, and I try and, I don't want to say pride myself because pride comes before the fall, but I try and be aware of myself that all the insecurities I have, and when I wasn't able to deal with those insecurities, and I wasn't able to deal with when I was unhappy with the way my life was and the way my job was or the way my relationships were, how I would project that onto other people. And people tend to either suppress, project, or escape in a lot of cases when you're really unhappy in your life. And I'm speaking from personal experience. When I was really unhappy in life, you either suppress it where you just bury it down and you're unhappy, but you bury it and you bury it and you bury it. Some people project it where they're unhappy with their life, but fuck, I'm going to give this person a piece of my mind because it makes me feel better about how shit my life is. And then there's escape, where you just completely escape and numb out from it. You watch too much TV, drugs, alcohol, things that numb you out. And when I started to realize that that's what I did, and in different parts of my life, I did different things, you know, for that, I was heavy on the escape. I had a very bad problem with drugs, bad problem with alcohol. I have an addictive personality as it is. And when I was uncomfortable with dealing with things that had happened to me or dealing with situations where I wasn't happy right now, I would just numb out to it and I would escape from it. And sometimes it's in a bit more of a positive sense. The gym was another way I escaped. I self-medicated with exercise. I also did it with sport. Like when I had a season ticket at Arsenal when I lived in London, I could tell you who was in the fucking reserve team starting on a Wednesday night because I wasn't happy with how my life was going. I had to live vicariously through my sports team. And the other times when I felt really bad, I realized that I would suppress it. I would just bury it and tell myself a story like, you know, it doesn't matter. Nobody's happy with, you know, their life or their job. You have to do it this way. Or I would project it where I would be unhappy and then somebody would post something on social and I would be, I generally wasn't the keyboard warrior. It didn't manifest for me in trolling people, but I would definitely tell my inner circle or people I was hanging around with. I'm like, did you see what this fucker put up on Instagram? And that was all me dealing with my insecurities. When I got more self-aware on how I was doing it and how it was manifesting in my life, when it happens to me, it allows me to deal with it based on understanding that hurt people hurt people. And it generally has nothing to do with me. And if people are hating on you, it generally has nothing to do with you. If people are projecting their own insecurity or their issue onto you, for whatever reason, that goes for everything. If somebody disagrees with your diet, if somebody disagrees with your lifestyle choice, if somebody disagrees with your sexual preference, if somebody disagrees with the person that you're seeing, it's normally an indicator, with the exception of maybe your inner circle or family members who just genuinely want the best for you, most people are just projecting their hate onto you because there's something going on in their life. And Nelson Mandela has a great book, A Long Walk to Freedom. And he speaks about when he was dealing with apartheid in South Africa, where the segregation of blacks and whites, that when he was coming up in the sense of becoming president of South Africa, that he was aware that sometimes you just need to be a wall for the bullets of hate. And for me, sometimes I'm aware that sometimes I'm just going to be that wall. When you're so secure in yourself, and by all means for me, I'm not saying I'm super secure, but I'm a work in progress and I'm significantly stronger than I was because I make a conscious choice every day to make myself stronger and not do things that make me weaker. And when you do that, you're able to take those bullets better. And sometimes that's what people need. And I'm very aware that if someone is projecting hate onto me, sometimes they just need somebody to be able to take it because their mum doesn't take it, their dad doesn't take it, their husband doesn't take it, their wife doesn't take it because they beat the shit out of them or they verbally or emotionally abuse them if they do project it onto them. So they need to be able to put it out onto somebody else. And sometimes I'll just take that because that's what you need to do. I spoke in my book that my goal is to make this world a little bit better because I was here. And sometimes you do that actively with things like podcasts and messages that you put out. And I get some amazing messages from people. But sometimes you do it passively where the way you make the world better is being able to absorb that hate and being able to be that wall so that person can just get their frustration out right now. Because maybe that was the time that when you didn't bite back and somebody didn't emotionally berate them because they projected their insecurity outwards, it was the thing that made them think, shit, maybe it's me that's being the asshole. Maybe it's me that's being the, you know, person that's being inconsiderate right now. Maybe that was the moment that did it. And I'm aware that that can happen. And it shows up in different forms. Mandela's book helped me a lot with that. Learning about Nelson Mandela helped me a lot. Martin Luther King, similar. That sometimes it's not about constantly putting out your message. It's about just being that shield or being that wall and just taking that abuse from some people because that's what they need. And if your goal is to make the world better because you're here, then you need to be able to stand in that form of whatever is needed by that person at that moment in time. Sometimes it's actively some positive words that you give them. Sometimes it's just being a way to take that hate because maybe that's what they need right now. That frame, right or wrong, that contextual reframe is what helps me deal with it. When you realize that hurt people, that most people that aim negativity or hate in your direction or have comments on what you're doing are normally dealing with their own thing just in the wrong way. They're channeling their energy in the way that is too connected to you. But when you're able to step outside of that and realize that, okay, every time I've ever hated on anybody, it's because I've been not happy with an area of my life and I've been channeling my energy in the wrong way. When you're able to step out of that and take a, you know, an airplane bird's eye view from the whole picture and stand outside of it, you realize that shit, this is what everybody does. And when you see all the projection in the world, that people that are unhappy and people that are projecting their misery and negativity on other people are just people that are unhappy with their lives, it makes you a little bit more grateful for your life when you are secure and you are happy. And then that's the wolf you feed. That's the thing that you give the most energy to. And that's the thing that expands. So that's the everything from today's episode. So this is a very heavy mindset episode. I have a few other questions here, but I think I'll save them for another one. Because we've hit the hour mark on this one. I hope you enjoyed it. I fucking can't even remember what I was talking about. Like, it was one of those episodes of just press record and talk. Very heavy on the mindset today. So I do hope it helped. And if it did, hit me up on Instagram. Tag me on your story. Post in your story and just tag me, Brian_Keen_fitness. Let me know what you thought. Thank you for listening. Catch you all real soon.